I grew up in the 1950s reading the Dr. Seuss books. I absolutely adored the strange and brightly colored drawings of his creatures and was thrilled by their outlandish behavior, the anarchic frenzy of the Cat in the Hat, the unseemly grandiosity of Yertle the Turtle. For my generation of kids, Dr. Seuss was not so much a favorite author as the only author, and we derived a very considerable sense of our world from his books, a world of whirling energy and infinite possibility, peopled by improbable characters, yet reassuringly able to right itself just before disaster struck. They were profoundly cheerful and optimistic, quintessentially American, and they were virtually unknown at the time in Britain. In an equivalent manner, American children knew nothing of Beatrix Potter, who had every bit as profound an influence on several generations of English children as my beloved Dr. Seuss did on American ones. I doubt a little whether Potter's influence is as strong as it was. She died, after all, in 1943, and the first of her books, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, was first published in 1901. Today's children are more likely to be interested in Harry Potter. But the gentle, pastoral qualities of Beatrix's world, inhabited by animals who are fuzzy toys incarnate, safe and dependable, gives us some retrospective insight into an England now virtually extinct, rural, familiar, whimsical, cozy. Her nature is not entirely sanitized, but it is nature not red but pink in tooth and claw. And Beatrix Potter's tiny pastel watercolors continue to evoke magic gardens of delight. For three generations, there can hardly have been a child's bedroom throughout Middle England that didn't have a little shelf full of well-thumbed Beatrix Potters, their covers dusty and marked, with, more often than not, the scrawls and doodles of some childish admirer throughout the text. And that's the problem with children's books. Children handle them with grubby little hands. They love the rhythm and the repetition of the same story, read over and over again, until they know it by heart. Rereading is one of the delights of childhood. It makes the world safe and predictable, but it's murder on the books. So when it comes to collecting children's literature, which is a form of nostalgia engaged in largely by the middle-aged, intent on recapturing some of the magic of childhood, it's nearly impossible to find the books in the right condition. You know what Beatrix Potters look like. There are rows of them for sale in any bookshop, and the format is much the same as it was from the start. They look absolutely fresh. The small illustrated covers crisp and unstained, the pages white, pristine. They should look like that. They're new. But when you find a first edition Beatrix Potter, now some 100 or so years old, in perfect condition, you have a vague sense of something gone wrong. Why doesn't it look used? Was the book bought as a present, put away, and somehow never given? Why not? Did the present giver decide against giving the book? Might the child have died? Or was the book given into a family so obsessional that it had to be treated as a hallowed object, rather than as the functional bit of amusement that Beatrix Potter would have intended? Whatever the reason, one thing is certain. If you can find one of the first few Beatrix Potter first editions in beautiful condition, it will be worth a lot of money and avidly sought after. The collectors of children's books are more than usually obsessional. From the earliest time that she could remember, Beatrix Potter, who was born in 1866, had her head crammed full of stories and pictures. She was a reclusive and private girl, and she stayed like that for most of the rest of her life, as her biographer Margaret Lane found to her acute discomfort.
She could be awfully rude if she felt like it. A good many years ago, I wanted to write an essay on the art of Beatrix Potter, and most people at this time thought she was dead. And I wrote to her and said I had loved her books so as a child and had admired them more and more as I grew older, and I wanted to write this essay. Might I come and see her? Because I was very anxious that anything I wrote should be absolutely accurate, and also that I should say nothing that she didn't like. And I got back the rudest letter I have ever had in my life. It began Madam, my books have always sold without advertisement, and I do not intend going for that kind of thing now. And it went on in that vein for about half a page, and it was so really insultingly rude that I'm afraid that in a rage, the tears coming into my eyes with temper, I tore it up and threw it into the fire. It was a very silly thing to do, because nowadays it would be worth a lot of money.
Beatrix Potter had no intention at first of becoming anything so grand as a writer. Her earliest work consists of illustrated letters written to the children of friends on their birthdays, at Christmas, or when they were ill. And at the time, indeed, the writing of illustrated letters was still commonplace. Lewis Carroll did them, and Edward Lear and later John Betjeman. They were written to amuse both the recipient and the author. Peter Rabbit first appears in one of these letters in September of 1893, when Beatrix Potter was 27, and was written to Noel Moore, the 5-year-old son of her former German teacher and companion, Annie Carter. The story is instantly recognizable.
I shall tell you a story about 4 little rabbits whose names were Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail and Peter. They lived with their mother in a sandbank under the root of a big fir tree.
Accompanying the story are pictures of the 4 rabbits with the insouciant Peter given pride of place. Even in this early version, the story bears all the hallmarks of Beatrix Potter's mature style, which seems so simple as to be effortless. It was not.
My usual method of writing is to scribble and cut out and write it again and again. The shorter and plainer, the better. I think the great point in writing for children is to have something to say and to say it in simple, direct language. I polish, polish, polish. To the last, revise.
Her childish readers and their parents greatly admired her picture letters. They begged for more. They saved them assiduously. They showed them to their friends. It was enough to make a girl think of publication. Within a few years, Miss Potter inquired, maybe a little disingenuously, whether Noel happened to have kept that letter about a rabbit, and if so, could she borrow it? He had, and she could. She soon rewrote the story and did a set of further pen and ink illustrations. Adding a coloured frontispiece showing the ill Peter being given chamomile tea by his mother, she wrapped the story in card wrappers and entitled it The Tale of Peter Rabbit and Mr. McGregor's Garden by H. B. Potter. During the years 1900 and 1901, the story was sent to 6 publishers, none of whom showed much interest, partly, it seems, because the book was too small and too short to be of commercial interest. But Beatrix Potter stuck to her guns.
I would rather make 2 or 3 little books costing 1 shilling each than 1 big book costing 6 shillings, because I think little rabbits cannot afford to spend 6 shillings on 1 book.
Her answer was to publish the book herself. She had line blocks made up for the black and white drawings with a 3-coloured frontispiece. Optimistically, she had 500 copies of both printed, though she only intended an initial edition of 250 copies. Presumably, she was already thinking that might not be enough. On December 16th, just in time for Christmas, the books arrived, covered in grey-green paper wrappers with a picture of 4 rabbits on them, entitled The Tale of Peter Rabbit. They made perfect Christmas gifts for her many friends, and the rest she sold off at a halfpenny apiece. The books were virtually gone within a couple of weeks, and in February, a second edition of some 200 copies was issued in a slightly better binding with olive green covers and with a few minor textual changes. These copies can be distinguished from the earlier ones because they bear the date February 1902 and the first 250 copies were undated. But just before the first of these privately printed editions came out, the London publishing firm of Frederick Warne decided that it should, after all, like to publish what it called her quaint little bunny book. The only stipulation Warne made, fortunately, was that all of the illustrations should be in colour. Miss Potter set to work immediately, but was full of self-doubt.
I wish the drawings had been better. I dare say they may look better when reduced. But I am becoming so tired of them, I begin to think they are positively bad. My brother is sarcastic about the figures. What you and he take for Mr. McGregor's nose was intended for his ear, not his nose at all.
These original drawings for Peter Rabbit survive today in the archive of the publisher Frederick Warne, where Diana Syrat is chief editor.
The jewel in the archive, and they're just lovely, and they've been very well preserved over the years, so they remain fresh as they were when they were first drawn almost. She was obviously very talented. She was very keen on natural history, and the drawings are actually very realistic and very anatomically correct. Yes, I think she was a very good artist, actually. She was very observant.
It's almost impossible to value pictures like these because, of course, the actual originals have never come onto the market. But I don't think any of them can be worth less than £50,000. It's an index of how popular the book became. Though both writer and publisher were uncertain about the book's prospect, Peter Rabbit was an immediate success. 8,000 copies were issued in October of 1902, followed by a further 12,000 the next month and another 8,000 the next. Warne reprinted and reprinted, and the public bought and bought. Peter Rabbit had become, almost overnight, one of the greatly loved characters of children's fiction. Sadly, Peter, one of Beatrix Potter's favorite pets, never quite lived to see the books. In one of her own privately printed copies, Miss Potter wrote the following note.
In affectionate remembrance of poor old Peter Rabbit, who died on the 26th of January, 1901, at the end of his ninth year. He was bought at a very tender age in the Uxbridge Road, Shepherd's Bush, for the exorbitant sum of 4 shillings and 6 pence. Whatever the limitations of his intellect or outward shortcomings of his fur and his ears and toes, his disposition was uniformly amiable and his temper unfailingly sweet, an affectionate companion and a quiet friend.
But Peter wasn't merely a companion and a friend. He was a version of Beatrix Potter herself, Margaret Lane.
It's as though she were a little animal living in a burrow, who not only came out at night, but also had to fill the mouth of the burrow with sticks and moss. Do you know? It's that kind of instinct for cover. A desire for secrecy, such as I've never encountered in any young person in my life.
Beatrix Potter would be astonished. A nice copy of one of the first 250 privately printed Peter Rabbits would now set you back some £40,000 or so. And even the first Frederick Warne copies are worth a good few hundred. By way of contrast, my American old chum, The Cat in the Hat, is only worth about £4,000 in first edition. These values are for copies in excellent condition, of course, with the nice final irony that the book so treasured by today's collectors must have been unloved by the children who first owned them. They wouldn't look so clean if they'd been properly loved. Not unlike children themselves.